which anything might happen. A pen of misery, thought Underhill. Why do children insist on making life horrible for each other? Oh, the continual torture. He heard himself sigh with immense relief. Thank God childhood was over and done for him. No more pinchings, bruisings, senseless passions, and shattered dreams. A gust of wind tore the paper from his hand. He ran after it down the playground steps. Clutching the paper, he retreated hastily. For in that one brief instant, stranded in the playground's atmosphere, he had felt his hat grow too large, his coat too cumbersome, his belt too loose, his shoes too big. He had felt like a small boy playing businessman in his father's clothes. The gate behind him had loomed impossibly tall, while the sky pressed a huge weight of grayness at his eyes, and the scent of iodine, like a tiger's breath exhaled upon him, blew his hair. He tripped and almost fell, running back. He stood outside the playground, like someone who has just emerged in shock from a terrible cold sea. Hello, Charlie. He heard the voice and turned to see who had called him. There, on top a metal slide, a boy of some 9 years was waving. Hello, Charlie. Mr. Charles Underhill raised a hand. But I don't know that boy, he thought. And why should he call me by my first name? The boy was smiling high in the misty air, and now, jostled by other yelling children, rushed shrieking down the slide. Underhill stood bemused by what he saw. Now the playground was an immense iron industry whose sole product was pain, sadism, and sorrow. If you watched half an hour, there wasn't a face in the entire enclosure that didn't wince, cry, redden with anger, pale with fear one moment or another. Really? Who said childhood was the best time of life? When in reality it was the most terrible, the most merciless era, the barbaric time when there were no police to protect you, only parents preoccupied with themselves and their taller world. No, if he had his way, he touched the cold fence with one hand, they'd nail a new sign here, Torquemada's Green. And as for that boy, the one who had called out to him, who was he? There was something familiar there, perhaps in the hidden bones, an echo of some old friend, probably the son of a successfully ulcered father. So this is the playground where my son will play, thought Mr. Underhill. So this is it. Hanging his hat in the hall, checking his lean image in the watery mirror, Underhill felt wintry and tired. When his sister appeared and his son came tapping on mouse feet, he greeted them with something less than full attention. The boy clambered thinly over him, playing King of the Hill. And the father, fixing his gaze to the end of the cigar he was slowly lighting, finally cleared his throat and said, I've been thinking about that playground, Carol. I'm taking Jim over tomorrow. Not really. That playground? His mind rebelled. The smell and look of the place were still vivid. That writhing world with its atmosphere of cuts and beaten noses, the air as full of pain as a dentist's office, and those horrid tic-tac-toes and frightening hopscotches under his feet as he picked up his newspaper, horrid and frightening for no reason he could see. What's wrong with that playground? Asked Carol. Have you seen it? He paused in confusion. Damn it, I mean the children there. It's a black hole. All the children are from well-to-do families. Well, they shove and push like little Gestapos, said Underhill. It'd be like sending a boy to a flour mill to be crushed into meal by a couple of two-ton grinders. Every time I think of Jim playing in the barbaric pit, I freeze. You know very well it's the only convenient park for miles around. I don't care about that. All I care is I saw a dozen kinds of bats and clubs and air guns. By the end of the first day, Jim would be in splinters. They'd have him barbecued with an orange in his mouth. She was beginning to laugh.